You are listening to African Perspectives with host Brother Oshi on Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasting or live program scheduling, hit them up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com.
Are listening to African Perspectives, where we view the issues of our day from an African worldview and African-centered perspective. This program is unapologetically African. It is a custom in the African tradition to ask elders for permission to speak, having been granted permission. To our ancestors, whose shoulders we stand on, to our elders, whose shadows we walk in, I greet you, my dear brothers and sisters, in the language of one of the greatest civilizations on this planet. It gave the world the basic disciplines of knowledge of science, math, architecture, music, writing, law, religion, you name it, we did it. The Greeks called it Egypt, but they called themselves Kemet, and Kemet means land of the blacks. I greet you all in the Kemetic language, the word of peace, Hotep. It is truly an honor and a privilege to pour libation because we truly do stand on the shoulders of those who came before us. We're going to use water because water has no enemies. Water is the great cleanser, the great purifier. Everything on the planet that lives, it needs water, from a tiny microscopic organism to a tall redwood tree. We pour water into the earth to invoke the spirits of our ancestors, and we say the word Ashe, which simply means so be it. So we pour this libation to God, for all that God has done and for all that God will do. We say, Ashe. We pour this libation to Mother Africa, birthplace of all humanity.
This call may be recorded.
Everyone who has lived, everyone who will live in the future, we all have a common ancestral root in Africa. We pour this libation to the classical civilizations of Africa. I mentioned Kemet in the opening. Kemet was the height, the apex, the zenith of African high culture. But there were others as well, as Timari, Punt, and Nubia. So we pour this libation to the classical civilizations of Africa. We say Ashe. We pour this libation to the contemporary civilizations of Africa, of Ghana, Mali, Songhai, Benin, Great Zimbabwe. Civilizations that were flourishing and growing while Europe was in a medieval or dark age. The University of Sankore at Timbuktu, an outstanding educational institution. So we pour this libation to the contemporary civilizations of Africa. We say, Ashe. We pour this libation to the Ma'afa, the Holocaust of our enslavement, the Infakani, the great tragedy, uprooted out of Africa. Our brothers and sisters lay a carpet along the Atlantic Ocean. We're in North America, South America, Central America, and throughout the diaspora. So we pour this libation to our brothers and sisters who suffered the Ma'afa, the Infakani, the Holocaust of our enslavement, the great tragedy. We pour this libation in their honor and in their memory. We do not know their names, but because of them and their sacrifice, we are here. So we say, Ashe. We pour this libation to those who fought against enslavement. If you ever heard me do a libation, you will know that we were not slaves. I repeat, we were not slaves. We were captives. What does a captive want to do? Get free. So we pour this libation to all those men and women who fought against enslavement. In fact, I maintain that some of us are more of a slave today than we were in our initial captivity, because some of us are a slave to vice, to corruption, to drugs, sex, and violence. So we pour this libation to those who fought against enslavement. Gabriel Prosser, Nat Turner, Dingmark Vesey, Harriet Tubman. We always resisted, and we will always resist. So we pour this libation in the name and the honor of those men and women who fought against our captivity. We pour this libation to those unborn, those young men and women who will once again lead us back on the stage of human history as a free and proud and productive people. We sashay. We pour this libation to brotherhood and sisterhood, together for the union of family. We need each other. We don't have good family life. There's a saying, conditions shape conduct and consciousness. The conditions in our community are bad. The conduct towards each other is not good. Because why? We lack consciousness. And consciousness is more than just awareness. Consciousness is a deeper understanding of who you are historically, who you are culturally. So once we begin to understand the importance of brotherhood and sisterhood together for the union of family. Brothers and sisters, let us all say, Ashe, Ashe.
You are listening to Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasts or live programming, hit them up at timeforanawakening.com.
Good morning, African world. You are listening to African Perspectives here on the Motherland Media Network, on timeforanawakening.com and blacktalkradionetwork.com. I am your host, Brother Oshi. Hotel family, hope all is well with you today. Hope you're going to have a good day today. It's a nice day here. And so hope it's a nice day wherever you are, so you can get all the, so you can do all the things that you want to do, should do, must do, can do, and will do. And I hope you get a chance to do it safely. And I hope that is the reality, to do it safely, because it's still happening out there. And of course, the weather's not an issue, because whatever the weather it is, what that is. And so, you know, put on a coat, a raincoat, some boots, gloves, a hat, because if it has to get done, brothers and sisters, we'll get it done. That's right. You're listening to African Perspectives. We're here every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m., 10 to 12 Central, 9 to 11 Mountain, or 8 to 10 Pacific, any other time around the world. But if you cannot listen to this program live, you can always go to our archives at timeforanawakening.com. That's right, at timeforanawakening.com. You see at the top of the page, podcast, click on that. The drop down, you'll see African Perspectives. Click on that, and there will be programs that are dated and titled. The shortcut, of course, is go to babaoshi.net. Babaoshi.net, and then bam, you'll see the programs. And there's still some issues with the programs, I must admit. And Brother Kwaku and Brother Elliot of Time for Awakening are working those things out. So hopefully, all the previous programs that have been taped will be available in the very immediate future. And that's for sure. We hope that's what happens, because there's some good programs, some of them. There's some good programs. Yeah. Other programming we have here on Time for an Awakening Media. Once again, this program is every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. On Mondays, from 6 to 8, all times are going to give our Eastern times. And I need to update this. I really need to talk to Brother Elliot to send me an updated media lineup, because I think Acres of Diamonds is not on the program anymore from 6 to 8. I believe Black Therapy Central is still on. Black Therapy Central from 8 to 9 with Dr. Mawia Kamban and Taki Kamban. And then Conversation Reparations is every first and third Mondays with Brother Jamoke and Sister Lacey of Encobra. Tuesdays, every Tuesday from 8 to 10, Black Reality Think Tank with Dr. William Rogers. And I know I talked to Dr. Rogers, and he had his crew on. He had some good brothers and sisters. And of course, my good friend, Sister Benicia Wayan, and Dr. Bruce Bridges, and so many others. He has a good crew on, and they discuss. And in fact, they were discussing, I believe, yesterday, the Vodun. Yeah. He did, you know, Doc Rogers ain't scared, y'all. You know, he'll touch some good subjects. You know, he ain't afraid to go outside of the boundaries, you know. You know, even though they do some Christian stuff. But hey. On Wednesdays, Black Farmers Report is every Wednesday from 8 to 9. So this evening, the Black Farmers Report from 8 to 9. If it's Friday and it's 8 p.m. Eastern, it's time for an awakening with Brother Elliot and Brother Richard. Every Friday, time for an awakening. Saturday from 4 to 6, I believe this program is off too. Sister Talk from 4 to 6. I think they're on Blog Talk Radio now. So, because I'm going to update this, but I know this program is on, and that is from 7 to 9, the Sankofa Council of Elders. The Sankofa Council of Elders from 7 to 9 on Saturdays. And then Sunday at 7 p.m., once again, brothers and sisters, it is time for an awakening with Brother Elliot and Brother Richard. And the number to call is 215-490-9832. 215-490-9832. We Buy Black. We Buy Black, the largest online marketplace for American African-owned businesses, is WeBuyBlack.com. Get everything you need from American African-owned businesses from WeBuyBlack.com that are products that are produced by us. And, of course, WeBuyBlack.com has been seeking monetary donations and contributions to develop a supermarket here in the Atlanta area. That's right, I said it. And it pains me to say it, damn it, that we don't have a supermarket. But all these folks here, I mean, the city is small. As I've explained many times, the city itself, the city of Atlanta, is 600,000. You know, and the area itself is small. But that little small area is right in the northern part of the middle of the state. And it is within five different counties. The majority of Atlanta is in Fulton County, then the DeKalb County, then Cobb County, Gwinnett, and the metropolitan area makes up 6 million. 6 million people in the metropolitan area of Atlanta, and we don't have one. So in fact, I think outside of the city of Atlanta, I think they got one or two service stations that are owned by us. There's all kinds of other stuff, but stuff that to me that is we go to on a daily basis that could generate money for us and jobs for us. Yeah, exactly. We Buy Black. So check out WeBuyBlack.com. Africa for the Africans, Brother Bomani Atahimba is my good brother and friend, and he has Africa for the Africans. And he's going to be taking some people on a tour upcoming real soon. And, you know, I really appreciate Brother Bomani Atahimba. I'll be checking him out real soon for his upcoming trips. And go to his website, AfricaForTheAfricans.org. AfricaForTheAfricans.org. If you want to see pictures of previous tours, go to facebook.com/Bomani. If you want to see videos of previous tours, go to youtube.com/Bomani2007. And believe me, these are updated. You know, these are updated. This is the most current of his, tours that he has given, and also too he has some archival stuff. So Brother Bomani has been doing great work, brothers and sisters. Let me tell you about the upcoming tour. His upcoming tour is November 18th. That's to Tanzania, November 18th to the 29th. I was going to go on that one, but I'm planning to go, and it's been raised by. All the trips have been raised by $100. It was $37. Now it's $38. Still a very affordable, still very good price. Because I'm going to go with the Bulezi. The Bulezi, that's the young people that I've been working with here, with Brother DeMonte and Sister Miriam, and, working with them. Then, of course, here's a tour around the holiday time, December 24th to January 5th to Ghana. And then April 1st to April 11th, 2022, to Senegal and Gambia. And then there's a Ghana trip again from the 24th to June 5th, May 24th to June 5th, going to Ghana. And once again, they're $3,800. So give Brother Bomonte a call, okay? Habashah. Habashah Incorporated. Habashah stands for Helping Africa by Establishing Schools at Home and Abroad. And of course, they have the Kashi Project that is ongoing in Africa. When you go to the website, you'll see the beautiful programs that they have. Habashah Works, Black to Our Roots, Sustainable Seeds and Golden Growers and Urban Green Jobs. Habashah Incorporated. .org. Check them out. Okay. The Ledge Group. The Ledge Group. That's right, the Ledge Group. That Ledge stands for Land for the Environmental Development of Group Economics. And of course, they have, they deal in the four areas that are vital to human existence: food, water, clothing, and shelter. They have 12 programs, 12 projects in six countries, with over 170 employed and over 260 members. Become a member of the Ledge Group. In fact, membership has its privileges, as we all know. And you have an opportunity to buy land in Tanzania. Some people call it Tanzania, but in Tanzania, you have the opportunity to buy an acre of land for $250. $250. Put a G together, $1,000. You got 4 acres of land. And I'm quite sure it's some very nice land, especially in Tanzania. So, the Ledge Group. Bibiatumi. A-B-I-B-I-T-U-M-I. Bibiatumi.com. There's a conversational Akan language workshop coming up on the 30th. I haven't seen the program or the website in a while. But once again, go to bibiatumi.com. They have all kinds of programs, a capoeira program, dance, self-protection, all kinds of stuff on the website. When you go there, make it a favorite and share it with others. Or Bibiatumi and the community university that they have established on the continent, bibiatumi.com. Wadada's Healthy Marketing Juice Bar, located in the West End here in Atlanta, Georgia. Ralph David Abernathy, right across the street from Soul Veg, up the street from the Shrine of the Black Madonna, which is open on Fridays and Saturdays from 1 to 7. On Fridays and Saturdays, the Shrine is open, and they're going to be doing the classes online. When I talk to Brother Olatunji back in just about a month ago, the thing they had there. So, also too, check out the Medu Bookstore in the Greenbrier Mall. Mama Nia is in a new place. It's just a lot of good space. She has a great selection of books, postcards, greeting cards, certificates, T-shirts, and so much more. The Medu Bookstore in the Greenbrier Mall. Give Mama Nia a call. If you're in the area, drop by. But if you're not, give her a call at 404-346-3263. That's 404-346-3263. The Medu Bookstore in the Greenbrier Mall. The Black Dot Cultural Center and Bookstore in Lithonia. Man, I tell you, I love what Brother Kazinde Ajamu has done with the space he has there. I really do. The Black Dot Cultural Center and Bookstore looks great, and I hope that brothers and sisters will patronize them every month, every week, every day, every year, because we need the Black Dot Cultural Center and Bookstore. It is a sacred place. It is a place that we can go to and present to our community without having to ask anybody a damn thing, okay? You know what I'm saying? You got it. Homeland Village Cultural Gift Shop in Macon, Georgia. If you're in the Macon, Georgia area, stop by at 2910 Napier Avenue in Macon, Georgia. Give Brother Abijah a call at 478-256-1166. That's 478-256-1166. That is the Cultural Village. And, I mean, he has so much stuff in that place. I mean, it reminds me of Afrocentrics here in Atlanta, in the West End. You know, they found a way to every part of that building. And I remember when it wasn't like that.
but they transformed it in every part of that, of their story. There's something in there, and it's presented very nicely for you to buy. And the same thing with this, but he has furniture, clothing, books. He has a restaurant. Yes. In the Homeland Village. The Homeland Village. Community events he has there ongoing. So that's right. Us Lifting Us every Thursday night. Tomorrow night, the Thursday night broadcast every Thursday night of Us Lifting Us. You know. On Blog Talk Radio, go to blogtalkradio.com/ULU. Us Lifting Us, the name of the program is Dare to Win. It's every Thursday night from 9 to 10. From 9 to 10. If you want a call to listen, you can do that. Or if you have a question, comment, or concern, you press 1 and then you move up the queue. And that number is 929-477-2789. 929-477-2789. Us Lifting Us, the Economic Development Cooperative for our people, in the spirit of Ujamaa Cooperative Economics, or as we like to say, family-centered economics. Us Lifting Us, the Economic Development Cooperative for our people. Yeah. Where's that at? Oh, here it is. Okay. Akabin Institute. Baba Baruti was our guest this past Monday. I thank him so much. You know, I tell you, anytime that we can have him on the program, it is an honor. It's a pleasure. And, you know, it's a busy man. But he's doing a lot for our people, and you can support him by going to Akabin Institute, P.O. Box 10786, Atlanta, Georgia, 30310. He has a fundraising effort this month, October. It's only a few days left in October, but one thing is for sure, they can still raise some funds beyond October, okay? If you want to use PayPal, if you got a PayPal, put in YAA Baruti, BARUTI, at yahoo.com. If you want to use Cash App, put in the $ YAA, the letter M, then Baruti, BARUTI. If you want to use Cash App, make sure there's two A's, YAA. Okay? So those are the ways that you can access. There's also Zelle, if you use Zelle. So, I mean, there's so many ways that they're making it available. Also, two brothers and sisters, they have books. Go to AkabinHouse.com. There's books and DVDs that you can purchase. AkabinHouse.com, that you can purchase DVDs and books. And, of course, they have Warriors Message to the Warriors, coming up on Saturday the 6th from 12 to 3. Donations $20 for men and $10 for our Warriors in training. Message to the Warriors. Okay. And Inia, Mama Ya, she has a quarterly as well the same day. Her program is from 4 to 6 on that Saturday. And, of course, it's Healer. Healer, heal thyself. Healer, heal thyself. And that's for the sisters. And the Kabuka. I agree with Baba Baruti. Visually, when you are right there and you see the children reenacting what our people have gone through, it's deep. It is extremely deep. And so to understand the ramifications of the kafa lines and all the things that have happened to us, Kibuka, that's going to be on online November 20th from 5 to 9. November 20th from 5 to 9. Families, $20, $15 a couple, $10 for individuals, $5 for children. Very affordable, but the impact is deep. So I'll be announcing that once again for Baba Baruti, Kibuka. Sun Goddess Sense, your one-stop natural shop, located at 4140 Jonesboro Road in Forest Park, Georgia, inside the International Discount Mall, booth 225. For more information, contact my friend, my sister, Shelly Amonset, at 404-434-7963. That's 404 334-734-7963. Sun Goddess Sense, your one-stop natural shop. And of course, and my good friend, Sister Gabby Aurelia, who's doing outstanding work with our young people in the northeastern portion of the island of Haiti, Sanjay-Haiti. SONJEAYITI.org. Sanjay-Haiti.org. Yeah. Trying to raise some information, trying to raise some consciousness. It's been a while since I've done them. It's been a while since I've done anything. But I'm glad to be here to do it. You know it. You know it. I'm very glad to be here to do it. Although I won't be here Friday. Tomorrow I'm going to be going to Baltimore City for the Southeast region of the International Association of Black Professional Firefighters. You know, I was a firefighter for over 31 years, and involved in the Black Firefighters Association since 79, or was that 78, something like that. And, I mean, seriously involved. I was a president at one time, and I've always been connected and always will be connected. And it's, sometimes you go to these conferences and it's just rejuvenating, especially when you see some of the older brothers. I know one just made a transition, brother Eric Van Couch, brother, yeah, Baba Van Couch. He was 94 years old. And next year in Hartford, Connecticut, is where we started in 1970. So we've tried to have that in 1970. Of course, we were unable to. And of course, didn't have it during this year of 2021. So we're going to have it next year, our convention, to honor our organization for 50 years. So I'm going to go see some of the brothers in the Southeast and a lot of transplants. A lot of transplants like myself who are from colder climates like New York and the Northeast and so forth. We're now in the Southeast. So I'm looking forward to this weekend fellowshipping with those brothers and sisters. So, yeah. Yeah. I wanted to give this quote out that I've been giving out consistently for a number of weeks now, months now. The brother who wrote the Sovereign Psyche, Ezra Erahone. This quote is just on point. There is no other historical instance of a formerly enslaved people who valued integration with their former captors to the point where they completely abandoned the superior wealth of their own homeland. That's sad. That's deep. Unfortunately to us, that's real. That's real. There is no other. There's no other. There's nothing in the history, in the annals of history, where a people were, had been enslaved by another people, and those people who were enslaved by the other people valued to integrate with them at the expense of the wealth that they had at their disposal, under their feet, that was theirs. That's how messed up we are. That's how messed up we are. I come on this program every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. And what I try to do to the best of my ability is to put something on our minds, is to get us to think outside of the imposed boundaries that Europeans have placed upon us. And that's deep because that's real. That's real. We're not supposed to think outside of what the European has imposed upon us. We're not. We're not supposed to think independently. We're supposed to do whatever they dictated to us to do. And unfortunately, we do this to our detriment. And see, I don't put the blame on us. I have always put the blame where the blame belongs, on Europeans, on those who do the manipulating, the undermining, for those who have nefarious and evil intent. I agree we should be aware, but when you're not in your right mind and you're being dictated to, you're being led in certain directions, that's how you go. That's the behavior you have. And sometimes, brothers and sisters, it is not easy. It is not easy. And for some of us, it's very difficult to step outside of those imposed boundaries that they placed upon us to think clearly, to have vision. You know, some of the other quotes that I read, the one by Mama Marimba, to think victoriously, to have that kind of clarity. It's hard for us to do that. One by Baba Rinoco. It's what you've been told. Who has been telling you? Who has been telling you? Still to this very day, it has been decades of information provided by African scholars and historians, men and women who without foundation money, grant money, reclaimed, recaptured, and restored the history of our people. As I'm saying this, I'm thinking of Drusilla Dungy Houston. Drusilla Dungy Houston said, listen, I have, and she said this in 1926, the year that Carter G. Woodson started Negro History Week. In 1926, she wrote a book called The Wonderful Ethiopians of the Ancient Kushite Empire. She said, I have dug up an irrefutable arsenal of facts that Harvard or Yale or even cowardly scholarship in our race or our culture can dare not refute. In the deepest part of the quote, how can a leadership point the way forward that is utterly ignorant of the past? Still to this day, the leadership that we have, the political leadership, the religious leadership, the people in finance, all of them are ignorant. They are ignorant. And some by choice of the history of African people and our accomplishments independent and outside of Europeans or outside of Arabs or outside of any damn body. And yet, we've been trained to believe that we were running around a jungle with a rag up our ass and a bone through our nose, never having created anything of worth or of significance. And sadly, some of our people continue to believe this. And so therefore, they do nothing. They only do what they have been told. So that's why, for me, I fell in love with us. I fell in love with Africa. I fell in love with Africans. I embraced the culture. I embraced the history. I know who we are. I know what we have done. But more importantly, brothers and sisters, I know what we can do. I know what we can do. But I know also that some of us are afraid. Yes, we are. We are afraid. It's the fear factor. We're afraid to step outside those imposed boundaries. We're afraid You know, we're afraid to release that vice grip. The European has a vice grip on our minds. Whenever, if ever you use the tool, and I know that you probably have, once you tighten that screw and then clamp it, the vice grip is set. You can't pull it apart. You can't pull it apart. The vice grip is set. The only way you can release that vice grip is this, is that knob at the end of the handle. You can turn that knob, and you could turn it easily. And if you continue to turn that knob, the tension is released, and you can open the vice grip. Turning that knob is acquiring knowledge of self. And the more knowledge of self that you have, and the more confidence and love of self and each other that you have, you're able now to open it, to release that vice grip, and look at the European for who and what they are. And look at us, and to begin to embrace us. I push for independence, self-determination, liberation, and sovereignty for African people. To me, there is no other choice. There is no other debate about any damn thing else. There is no other discussion. And I don't want to debate with some damn body whether or not we should be independent or self-determined. That's crazy. That's ludicrous. The only discussion we need to have is how, even though you have a different opinion than mine, but the question becomes, how do we achieve this? How can we work together to achieve this? Because this is the ultimate income. This is the end game. People talk about the end game. What's the end game? We need to understand what the end game is. What are we fighting for? I know it's election day across the country. Well, I don't know about everywhere across the country. I know in a few states it's election day coming up on Tuesday, you know. And here, of course, it's just tons of information everywhere. And, of course, we've been led to believe that voting is some kind of panacea and some kind of workable solution for us as a people, you know. But if you look at it realistically, if you look at it objectively, you come to the conclusion that no, you know, voting in and of itself, yes, it puts some people in office. Yes, you know, and in fact, you say the impact on voting is more on a local level than it is on a national level, you know, but most people, they really don't vote. A lot of times in local elections, they vote on the national elections for the president, the vice president, you know, their senators, their congresspersons, you know. And these individuals, they go to the Senate, or they go to Congress, and they become rich. And because of no term limits, they stay there forever. They stay there. They ain't done a damn thing. Some of their constituents and some states that they come from, especially I look at, you know, some of the southern states where these men or women, whoever, have wealth. And their states are poor. They've been poor. And they continue to be poor. But a lot of them, they deal with pharmaceuticals. They deal with the National Rifle Association. They deal with other entities that may have no impact on their state, but they do their vote on the national level. So they've prostituted themselves. The question we always must ask ourselves as African people, is it good for African people? Not is it good for me as an African, or is it good for me as a black man in America? No. is it good for African people? We deal holistically. We deal as a collective. Today, I'm going to talk about college sports. I've talked about college sports a number of times because of the manipulation of college sports, big time college sports, the big conferences, the five big conferences, the Southeastern Conference, the ACC, the Big Ten. These conferences get a lot of money. They get a lot of money off of us. The main two programs of basketball and football. Big money programs, billions of dollars. The coaches, the athletic director, the president of the university itself, big money. John Oliver, the dude from the UK who's on HBO, I played his piece a number of times that he did. About, I don't know, 3 or 4 years ago, maybe longer. I'm not sure, whatever. The only part that I hate about it is that he talks to one of the other brothers who has a makeup class to keep him eligible for football. And it was a course in Swahili. And then they made fun of it, which pissed me off because I believe we should have courses in Swahili. Damn right. We should have courses in Swahili. Or any other African language. In fact, it should be Swahili so we can have a language that we can talk to have some cultural privacy. That pissed me off. But aside from that, the piece is good. Especially expose that asshole, Dabo Sweeney, who was adamant that his players should not receive any money. While his ass at that time, I believe he had won the national championship, and he signed a $5 million contract. Football and basketball coaches in public institutions are the highest paid people in the state, not the governor, not any other executive administrator, not the chancellor of the university. The football coach, the basketball coach are the highest paid. And because they bring revenue to the state, they are justified. They bring revenue to that university. They're justified. They have brand new facilities. They have assistants who are making six figures. Even probably the weight coach making six figures. Because the head coach, he's making seven plus. You see, Nick Saban, I was going to say his daddy's name. I've been saying his daddy's name, Lou Saban, for so many years. Because he coached the Buffalo Bills back in the day and a few other teams in the AFL when I was watching football at that time. So I remember his father well. But Nick Saban, and he's been to a number of programs across from Michigan State, I believe. I know that. LSU, I think he won a championship there. And so, you know, he's, but of course, now he's at Alabama, and he's at Alabama. He's passed, I believe, surpassed Paul Bear Bryant, who was a legend at Alabama with the, you know, houndstooth cap that he used to wear and other things and statue out front. So his statue will be out front as well. More championships than I think he has and great revenue. I think he makes about $15 million. Listen, just like Dabo Sweeney, they got a salary in the millions from the university, from the state. But there are other revenue streams. There's television. There's radio. There's other endorsements. The athletic company that deals with that coach. Those players must wear that apparel, must wear that logo, where the coach gets the money for these cats to wear it. And so when Dabo Swinney was on that program, adamantly rejecting the fact that these young men who risked their lives playing football for Clemson University shouldn't be paid a dime. I remember, and I'm almost 70 years old, so, you know, I watched back in the 60s in the heyday. The earliest I can remember is late 50s. The only thing I remember is my mama cheering for the Braves, which, of course, the Atlanta Braves are in the World Series against Houston, and they won last night. If they win tonight, then they'll have three straight games here in Atlanta, and I don't believe the series will go back to Houston. The Atlanta Braves will win the World Series if they win tonight, which I don't think they will, but you never know. Sports are funny, but I remember 1957, my mother jumping up and down and being happy for the Milwaukee Braves with Hank Aaron and Eddie Matthews and Wes Covington. I remember some of those Braves. I went to some Braves games before they moved here to Atlanta. And, of course, they won here in 1995. They won the World Series in the politically incorrect the politically incorrect World Series. You had the Cleveland Indians, who are now going to be called the Guardians. You had the Cleveland Indians against the Atlanta Braves. They both out there doing chops. They both, hey, you know. That's so deep because the European don't give a damn about whose culture they co-opt, whose culture they destroy. They don't give a damn. Whose culture they appropriate, they don't give a damn. And give you nothing for it. So yeah, that politically incorrect, which was not a bad series, you know. But yeah. So they haven't been to the World Series in 22 years, 1999. So, but yeah. Atlanta Braves. But, you know, professional sports and college sports. I have an article that I'm going to be reading and when we come back from the break that deals with the amount of money that has been lost to our community, the billions of dollars through college athletics and how they undermine and manipulate college athletics. You know, I tell you, you know, what's interesting is that we're the ones that have been providing this. And the reason why, let me be very clear. The reason why this persists, this is maintained, is because we have no unity. If we had if we had functional unity, we can say to the NCAA or any other, no, we're not doing this. We'll stop. Ain't nobody doing nothing until we work this out equitably for us as well. But see, in America, you're not trained to be collective. That's why even though unions, and from a union standpoint, as a firefighter, which is interesting because the International Association of Firefighters is a union that has supported Democrats, as far as I can remember, but it's rank and file. The people in the union, particularly the Caucasians, support Republicans, as far as I can remember. I'm talking about, when did I come in? I came on the fire department in the mid-70s. They were supporting Republicans, probably even before then. They sure in the hell supported Trump. But yet, the union contributions to the IFF and its leadership supported Democrats. So, unity, lack thereof, is the reason we're in this situation, that these folks have made all this money. Nick Saban, Dabo Swinney. Now, I'll give, what's his name out of Kentucky, the basketball coach out of Kentucky, some props. I remember Al McGuire of Marquette. Al McGuire came to Marquette and developed Marquette as a national program. Marquette was a national program. I mean, it wasn't, but it, you know, a little small Jesuit college in Milwaukee. He made it. He made it because he had gotten some players, particularly recruited out of the New York area. He's coached some good players, brought them to Marquette, and Marquette became a very competitive team. Probably the first one, not Don Coaches, but the first one was really George Thompson. Because George Thompson was like a mini Elgin Baylor. You know, I love Elgin Baylor. Because George Thompson was really only 6'2", 6'3", but could jump out the gym. Wasn't a great shooter, but great around the basket, a good leader, and a good brother. I knew, had opportunity to work with George Thompson back in the day. And after his playing days, of course, you know. And so he was one of the first, but then he got more. He got Dean Memminger. He got Bob Lackey. So he built Marquette into a good program. And I remember he wasn't really advocating for athletes to get paid, but he was saying this. He said, see that paved driveway right there? Dean Memminger paid for that. Because he had able to recruit Dean Memminger and the program was good, the university paid him more money. And he got that driveway paved. He recognized the value of these brothers playing in your program, providing you with additional revenue beyond the salary that the university gave you, bonuses and so forth. John Calipari of the University of Kentucky. I remember John Calipari would go to some of the players who he had recruited, because he recruited some top-notch players, going to their homes and saying, listen, I can say to you, I can provide an excellent educational situation in Kentucky, but I'm just going to keep it real. I want your son, and I'm going to help your son become drafted. Because if your son gets drafted in the NBA, he'll sign a contract and he'll get paid. I'm not saying he's going to make it. I'm not going to say he's going to be a top draft choice. I'm going to say he's going to be drafted. And if he is drafted, he'll get a contract and he'll get paid. Given that fact, I'll give Calipari some props. I really don't like none of these cats, but he was saying to the families, I'm going to help get your son paid. I could talk about all the great educational facilities and how good the professors are. I don't know, tell that. That your boy was recruited to play ball, and I'm going to try to get him drafted. Look at the NBA draft night. Did y'all see this past one? In subsequent years, too. Getting paid. The same thing in the NFL. But those conferences, where these kids come from, and they don't get a dime. These kids lay their lives and their existence and their wealth and their abilities on the line so they can individually get paid. I'm going to tell you, brothers and sisters, they can break this madness. Becoming collective. I ain't saying forming a union. I'm saying somebody with heart. Some of these kids who have, and somebody outside of them like Harry Edwards back in the day who rallied the guys around the issue of justice for us during the Olympics in 1968. We'll talk more on it when we come back from the break. Oh, yeah, I'm going to do on the break. I got a couple of, songs that are from film. That's right. Claudine and Car Wash. You know, there's some soundtracks that are just dynamic. You know, in fact, if you know some soundtracks that you like, man, you know, send me the information or call me up about it or text me about it or email me about it, whatever. I love them, you know. And to me, these are two of my favorites. There are many others. Roll about a lot of good soundtracks. But these are two of my favorites. Claudine and Car Wash. You're listening to African Perspectives here on the Motherland Media Network on timeforanawakening.com and blacktalkradionetwork.com. We'll be right back. You stay with us.
You are listening to African Perspectives with host Brother Oshi on Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasting or live program scheduling, hit them up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com.
Please. You are listening to Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasts or live programming, hit them up at timeforanawakening.com.
Welcome back, brothers and sisters. Once again, you're listening to African Perspectives here on the Motherland Media Network on timeforanawakening.com and blacktalkradionetwork.com. Two of my favorite, man. It's just, I mean, both movies were outstanding. Gotta love Claudine. Great soundtrack. Not just that song, but other songs on the soundtrack as well. And of course, Car Wash, just fantastic. And I don't know. Just love them. Just love them. Like I said, if you got a soundtrack from a movie, you know, Isaac Hayes, whatever the soundtrack, just drop me a line and we'll play it one time on the program for you, no doubt. No doubt. Other programming we have here on Time for an Awakening Media. Once again, not sure of some of the things that I've been announcing over the time, and I need to get an updated list. But I know Acres of Diamonds comes on Mondays, and no, excuse me, Black Therapy Central on Mondays from 8 to 9. Black Therapy Central with host Dr. Mawia Kamban and Ataki Kamban. And then every first and third Mondays, Conversation Reparations with Brother Jamoke and Sister Lacey Evan Cobra. On Tuesdays, that's for sure. I know Dr. Rogers is on Tuesdays from 8 to 10. Black Reality Think Tank with Dr. Rogers. On Wednesdays, the Black Farmers Report. I believe it's still coming on from 8 to 9 on Wednesdays. And Friday, of course, it's time for an awakening with Brother Elliot and Brother Richard from 8 until on Fridays. Saturdays from 7 to 9, the Sankofa Council of Elders on Saturdays from 7 to 9. And then once again on Sunday at 7 p.m., time for an awakening with Brother Elliot and Brother Richard. And the number to call is 215-490-9832. 215-490-9832. Talking about the ripoff of our community by so-called amateurism of college sports. And I remember, you know, they put these particular words into college sports to enact amateurism and student athletes so they could cover themselves and whereby the college would not have to deal with injuries suffered particularly because of football early on. When you look at how football was played and the equipment or, you know, weak equipment that they had. So they had to cover themselves. And, of course, athletes would get injured. Sometimes athletes who were preparing themselves for a college career and hopefully ultimately a professional career would injure themselves. I now remember my big boy. He would have made it to the NFL, no doubt about it. Josh Oglesby. I remember when he, you know, I coached football for over 30 years. And youth football, anywhere from the ages of 12 up to 16. Not in that constantly, but I kept grouping each year upward till I finally coached teams that were 14 to 16. But also I coached them early on. Like from 12 to 14, something of that nature. So anyway, and, you know, Josh was a big kid, but he was talented. He came to me, he was taller than me when he first came to me at 12 years old, bigger than me. I'm 6 feet, you know. And so, yeah, Josh helped him get into high school at St. Francis. They went to state. They unfortunately lost the state game. And in this big year, he was, you know, they have a high school all-star game in San Antonio, Texas, where around Thanksgiving, maybe a little bit after, it's in that area, and where the kids go there and they have their family behind them, and they have three hats laid out in front of them. And which hat is he going to put on to go to the school that is, all the schools have recruited them, but that he has chosen to play his career at, his college career at, you know. Well, it was no mystery that he was going to go to Wisconsin, because I remember going to the meeting with his family, me and my assistant going to the meeting at Barry Alvarez, who was the athletic director at the time. Said, your son, we want him. We want him here in Wisconsin. We want him to stay. He has full ride. He has this, that, and the other. And so, you know, there it is. But he had hurt his knee in that senior year. And even though he was all Big Ten, he played valiantly. But at towards the end, he told me, Coach, I was taking drugs going in, taking drugs coming out. I just couldn't do it. You know, it would have been he would have been a top choice, great athlete, good kid. But that's the cost. And because that happened, there was nothing for him. You know? Nothing. So this idea of amateurism as it relates to college athletes, especially, I'm talking about, I ain't talking about Division III, you know, NAIA, state cop. No, I'm talking about the big time that you see There's 4, 5, 10 games on every Saturday, Thursday, whatever. The big time programs, they have big television contracts. They have big endorsements, big sponsorships, the Power Five conferences. A new study estimates that American African football basketball players in the Power Five conference have lost approximately $1.2 to $1.4 billion per year. They've lost that every year since between the year 2005 and 2019, or roughly $250,000 per athlete. They could have paid these guys $250,000 for that academic year. You know, I had proposed that they give the players a stipend, that their education, because a lot of these cats, and Richard Sherman, I know Richard Sherman had a little mental disturbance, some months ago. He's now with the Buccaneers. He's been great. He's great with Seattle. He played at Stanford. He was an academic All-American as well. Richard Sherman was, but he said himself, it's impossible to be the top athlete and do stuff academically. He said it. It's tough. For many of the players, particularly in these big programs, you practice all the time. And not just seasonally, you practice all year round. These big programs are serious. And so, you know, man, the big picture. Casual observers of college sports recognize an unspoken truth that unpaid, predominantly American African labor in football and basketball powers the multi-billion dollar enterprise of amateurism, enriching and benefiting coaches, administrators, and other athletics who are overwhelmingly Caucasian. The authors of this piece is Ted Atatos and Hal Singer. College sports amateurism costs American athletes billions of dollars. From Supreme Court justices to members of Congress, many have argued that the NCAA long-time prohibition on athletic compensation produces an interracial wealth transfer from American African football and basketball players to Caucasian coaches, administrators, athletes, and other programs. A recent study estimates that American African athletes in the Power Five conferences are losing approximately $1.2 to $1.4 billion a year, an amount that raises uncomfortable questions for schools and college sports leaders that have committed themselves to racial justice and equality. Well, you know, since the George Floyd thing, you know, everybody was, you know, Black Lives Matter, we are in this together, racial equality. Right. They said those things. There's a lot of things that are always said and very little done. Let's be real. Casual observers of college sports recognize an unspoken truth that unpaid, predominantly American African labor in football and basketball powers the multi-billion dollar enterprise of amateurism, enriching and benefiting coaches, administrators, and other athletes who are predominantly Caucasian. Driven by the NCAA amateurism rules, this appropriation of value has previously remained largely unquantified. In our current paper, in the antitrust bulletin, we aim to examine these shortcomings. In doing so, we estimate the interracial transfer of wealth from American African football and basketball athletes at the NC Power Five conference level, where college sports are most commercialized and lucrative to be approximately $1.2 billion to $1.4 billion per year from the years 2005 to 2019. 14-year examination. To put this figure into its proper perspective, deriving American African labor of a more competitive wage share amounts to an underpayment of approximately a quarter of $1 million a year for each and every American African football player and basketball player in these so-called Power Five conferences. The Power Five conferences, the Big Ten, the Pac-12, ACC, the SEC. Now, there's been some changes in the Big 12 and other conferences. I don't know if you've noticed, if you pay attention, I watch athletics, so I have some idea. Some teams have changed conferences. Texas and somebody are going to the Southern Athletic, the SEC, which is the biggest conference, I say, that wins, you know, that's Alabama now, you know, leaving the Big 12. To put this finger, this aggregation of American African athletes' wage share results from the NCAA's cartel's exclusive restraint of wage competition among its members through a prohibition on compensating athletes for their labor. Our estimate represents only funds that schools themselves could have used to compensate American African labor that generated them, and not some lost name, image, likeness opportunities from third parties. Let me tell you. Name, image, and likeness. That's the new thing. They agreed that some of these athletes could profit from their name, image, and likeness. This is individuals. These are individuals, athletes who have a name, who are very good. Some not even in college yet, who have already done so. They have already taken advantage of name, image, and likeness. I ain't talking about name, image, and likeness. I'm talking about the amount of money that the universities themselves generate. I know there are some guys who can get a agent, and they can do commercials now. They can sponsor whatever, utilizing their name, their image, their likeness. While recently proclaiming Black Lives Matter, institutions of higher education have for years diverted their revenues to benefit overwhelmingly Caucasian constituencies, coaches, administrators, athletes in predominantly Caucasian sports like tennis and golf and, you know, soccer. As Supreme Court Justice Brett Kavanaugh recently explained in his current opinion in Alston versus NCAA, where the court found the NCAA in violation of antitrust laws. Great. Thank you. The bottom line is that the NCAA and its member colleges are suppressing the pay of student athletes who collectively generate billions of dollars in revenue for college just every year. These enormous sums of money flow to seemingly everyone except the student athletes, college presidents, athletic directors, coaches, conference commissioners, and NCAA executives take in 6-7-figure salaries. Colleges built lavish new facilities, but the student athletes who generate the revenue, many of whom are American African, are from lower income backgrounds and end up with little or nothing. Well, they're going to get an education. Shh. I just explained to you, just as Richard said, as he said, that a lot of times they don't. They don't get an education. They use up their eligibility and then kick them to the curb. It's just like, I can't remember the brother's name. He was at Creighton University in Omaha, Nebraska. He played 4 years. They kept him eligible. He couldn't read. They used his 4 years. Once the 4 years was up, they kicked him to the curb. He was at Marva Collins School in Chicago. sitting in on tiny ass chairs. He got his degree. He is a teacher. Can't remember the brother's name. You know. To perform our analysis, we rely on financial and demographic data from the Knight Commission's College Athletics Financial Information database, the Equity in Athletics Disclosure Act database, the NCAA Demographics database, the Dallas Morning News College Football Salary data, and the Department of Education's Integrated Post-Secondary Educational Data System. All of this information is publicly available, meaning anyone can replicate our work that are doing. You can go through this and you can do the work yourself. After aggregating these data, we turn into estimating what economists refer to as the counterfactual or but-for world. This condition represents, if it wasn't for this, we would be this, or we could have that. This condition represents what American African athletes would have earned in the absence of the NCAA restraint. We use the National Basketball Association as a benchmark because the NBA is arguably has the most equitable collective bargaining agreement between labor and management in major sports. Unlike the National Football League, you know, the National Football League, the NFL is the most dangerous and the most scared for athletes because of the risking their lives and playing in that collision sport, and they have the weakest union. The National Football League, the NBA, hasn't used race norming to deny the brain injury settlement claims of retired American African players. It was in the news the last few weeks. I hope you caught it. I seen the piece some years ago talking about they use race norming. What does that mean? What they mean is that American Africans are less intelligent than Caucasians. So going into the NFL, you're automatically less intelligent. And so if you have a brain injury and a Caucasian has a brain injury, your ass is ass out. They will be equitably compensated or equally compensated or justly compensated, and you may get some crumbs because you came in deficient. I tell you, I don't know about y'all, man, but a lot of times what these Caucasians have done makes you want to holler and throw up both your hands. Race norming. And, of course, the ruling recently where they did away with it. And so now, hopefully, those brothers who truly have suffered will be compensated justly. And hopefully there are some of them whose cases were denied some time back will have the opportunity to go back in front of the court and seek their just compensation. And, of course, some of them passed on. And that's just unfortunate. In the NBA, athletes collectively captured approximately half of all revenue. And in 2021 season, American African players collected approximately 90% of that sum through their salaries, which puts their share of league revenue at 45%, equal to half of the 90%. So they are doing just what they should do as a collective body in the NBA. Applying that same 45% labor share to American African football and basketball players, men and women at the Power Five schools, our paper estimates lost wages under two scenarios. The first scenario, number one, treating the athletic scholarship players received as part of their wages, not treating these scholarships as part of their wages under the assumption that in a world without amateurism, schools would either offer room, board, and incidental expenses payments as additional compensation and to do away with them entirely. Or number two, depending upon on this scenario, we estimated that American African football, basketball athletes were subject to between $17 billion to $21 billion of accumulated wage theft from 2015 to 2019, or, as mentioned above, $1.2 to $1.4 billion a year. Then they have a diagram here of all the money that was lost, totally $46 billion. 46 basketball and food revenue. That was the revenue, $46 billion. Lost pay share, offsetting university aid, $17 billion of that 46. And then lost pay share dollars, American African, not offsetting university aid, $21 billion. Opponents of compensating college athletes have largely ignored this intergenerational transfer of wealth, availing themselves of this suspicious argument that college athlete programs lose money, a profound absurdity grounded in a misrepresentation of athletic finances. This reality was not lost on the Supreme Court in the recent Austin case, where the justices just opposed the economic windfall of college coaches and administrators to the collusive wage restraints that keep athletic labor or substance at subservient levels. In a concurring opinion, Justice Kavanaugh recognized that the wage share earned by athletes was artificially suppressed. Colleges and student athletes could proportionally engage in collective bargaining. That's what they need to do. Or seek some other negotiated agreement to provide student athletes a fair share of the revenue that they generated for their colleges, akin to how professional football and basketball players have negotiated for a fair share of league revenue. They recognize they are the NBA and the NFL, not so much NFL though, but it is, recognize that they are the product. Without them, there is nothing. They are the ones that make it happen. And so they are the ones that should seek and receive a greater portion of the revenues that is generated by their athletic ability, by their being there doing what they're doing. There is no compelling economic reason or efficiency rationale that explains why athlete compensation should be rendered subordinate in the chain of compensation to coaches and administrators whose positions depend on the labor of those athletes themselves. These coaches make millions. That's why I'm saying, that's why every time I see Dabo Swinney, I can't stand his ass. When I saw him on that piece, how adamant he was that these young men who are mostly, and if you ever see Clemson's team, Clemson, I would venture to say, is 80% American African. I doubt if there's a Caucasian. If there's a Caucasian on the defense, he's on the line. Maybe a linebacker. Outside of that, it's all brothers. And to me, nobody should play for him. Not a brother should play for him with that attitude that he has. All of them, really. All the brothers should get together and say, listen, we ain't playing for none of y'all until we work this out for our benefit. We're the ones who are on the field making it happen. Fans have always tended to avoid the cognitive dissonance. There's that word again, those two words, cognitive dissonance, of associating their penchant for watching college sports to the reality of interracial wealth transfer that characterizes the industry. To insulate themselves from the question of morality, some fans argue that athletes receive a fair compensation in the form of an education. I've always argued against this one, you know, because a lot of the players didn't or don't graduate. You know, the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill academic fraud scandal and the NCAA's refusal to undertake any reforms to avoid its reoccurrence has exposed nature of education as athletic compensation. And we need not retread the myriad reasons each that such an argument lacks any tether to the truth. Other fans simply avoid the problem entirely, claiming that they just want to enjoy the sports and not all this other stuff, all these other realities associated with them. But this position requires a similar detachment from reality, or perhaps an indifference to it. After all, many Americans appear entirely unconcerned with the squalid working conditions and living conditions of people overseas, laborers who feed the very voracious consumer appetites that are happening here. You don't want to know. You just want the product. You don't want how it's produced. You don't want to know all the terrible things that human beings in other parts of the world go through so you can have this, that, or the other. That's the European for you. That's the European for you. American institutions of higher education, undoubtedly, well aware of the reality that we describe in this paper, have also availed themselves of a third defensive mechanism, performative activism. Following the death of George Floyd in 2020, colleges and universities announced commitments to racial justice on social media. Duke University's basketball coach Mike Krzyzewski encouraged followers to say Black Lives Matter. Yeah. Of course, just like I said to you, there are many coaches who recognize the wealth that they have received from American African people, from these young men, and sometimes young women, because of their athleticism, that they could not take advantage for themselves. But these coaches and athletic directors and assistants and all the other people who work with them can take advantage of, and many times in six-figure, seven-figure salaries. Of course, he and many other college coaches and college sports profit handsomely from the labor of predominantly American African athletes who have been stripped of their economic rights by the NCAA cartel. None of those well-paid leaders have drawn a proverbial line in the sand by calling for an equitable athlete wage share. Not one. Not one of those coaches ever said, you know, this is a messed up system. This is a real usury system. And even American African coaches who were in the system, none of them said, stop, wait, you know, just let business as usual go on. Let us consistently and constantly let us get paid. That's the bottom line. We getting paid. If they're good enough, understand some brothers and sisters. The ones who make to the professional rank on the professional football, professional basketball level is minuscule, is a percent. If that is just small, it's small. But I would venture to say every athlete that plays at that level that we're talking about here, that is their idea. Their idea is that they will be on a professional level. But of course, he and many other Caucasian coaches in college sports profit handsomely from the labor of predominantly American African athletes who have been stripped of the basic economic rights by the NCAA cartel. None of these well-paid leaders have drawn a proverbial line in the sand by calling for the equitable athlete wage share. To the contrary, Clemson coach Dabo Swinney has called athletes entitled for wanting. He called them entitled for wanting fair compensation while he signs two contracts he signed recently. He makes about $10 million a year with four other at least revenue streams. I hate Dabo Swinney. Never mind that 62% of his players are African American. I thought it would be like 82 from what I've seen, but I'll say this. His 62 of the 100 players that he has on his roster, those 62 are deeply contributing members to the success of his football program. Believe it. We harbor no illusions about the difficulties of installing racial justice in a system seemingly designed to operate in its absence. In this regard, the economy of college sports reflects the inequality that pervades society, where examples of structural racism are legend. American African homeowners have suffered from the practice of redlining, reducing their property values. American African neighborhoods have been subject to gentrification. Schools in American African communities receive less funding and report less access to computers and internet than predominantly Caucasian schools. And American African suffers disproportionately from systematic racism in this so-called injustice system. College sports, amateurism, is yet another chapter in the volumeless historical record of systematic racial injustice. When American African athletes achieve success and generate tremendous value despite the obstacles placed in their way, the same universities that profited from their labor label them amateurs to avoid paying them their fair wages. Such self-serving semantics are common practice for the NCAA, which also manufactured the term student athlete to avoid paying workers' compensation for sports-related injuries in the aftermath of the University of Denver versus Neyem decision in 1953. Since 1953, we call them student athletes. We're not going to pay them workman's comp. We'll help fix their injuries, but they ain't getting no compensation. If his injury is done, it's done. In evaluating and estimating the economic impact of the interracial transfer of wealth in college sports, we seek to inform those who have the ability to make systematic and policy changes to redress these wrongs. If they decline to do so, then at least they can no longer ignore and be ignorant of the economic exploitation of American African athletes that has been unfolding before their very eyes for decades. Good article. Good article. For decades. Yeah. I'm telling you. Anybody got any questions? Anybody got any comments? I see a number of people hit star twice. And I know for some people it's not a subject that they're too familiar with. It's not discussed very often. It needs to be a discussion that we as American Africans should have, because as you just seen, we send our young men particularly to these universities and we're all happy that they got a scholarship to go play at one of the Power Five schools, you know. And yet, we don't understand the amount of money that will be generated by him to that university for the coach, the athletic director, and other individuals over his 4 years of eligibility. Now, of course, they have been able, if you are really, really good, you can skip years of eligibility and go directly to the pros. You have the opportunity to do that, whereas way back back in the 60s, 70s, you were not able to do that. You had to do all your 4 years. You were tied to that university once you've made that commitment. I mean, you know, so I mean, things have changed, but let's be real, things have changed to a degree, you know. So oh, yeah. So I'm going to tell you what I'm going to do. I'm going to play another cut. and then come back and wrap this up. I'm going to play another I'll play another soundtrack from another movie, Roll Bounce. We'll be right back, brothers and sisters. You're listening to African Perspectives here on the Motherland Media Network on timeforanawakening.com and blacktalkradionetwork.com. bounce. Rest right on. Roll bounce. No doubt. Just to end up discussing what I believe is just another one of the examples of a system designed by Europeans for Europeans. And the only challenge to that system for us is African unity. But because we here in America don't practice African unity, because of us being fragmented, divided, and the instilling of self-hatred, the belief or lack of belief in ourselves. Hey, Jay, how you doing?
The question is, how you doing? I've been listening to you on your annual Dalvin Sweeney rant, man. And I said, man, let me call him up right quick and give him a little back in and what he's saying about this filthy, no good, stinking saltine and the manner in which he used our children.
Thank you, Jay.
Nothing but benefit himself and his cohorts, but don't want the kids to be in any type of position to benefit for themselves. So I just wanted to say I was listening, I was enjoying it.
I appreciate it.
You know, it's nothing wrong with an annual rant about a no good, filthy, stinking saltine.
I agree.
My boy Ralph always say, unify or die.
That's right.
You know what I mean?
That's right, brother.
That's what we need to do. We need to unify or die on
this
subject matter.
That's right.
But other than that, man, how are you feeling, brother? Are you all right? Are you back to your normal
self? I'm trying to get there, man. I'm trying to get there. It seems to be another thing here, another thing there. But I'm doing so much better. I'm feeling good. In fact, I'm leaving tomorrow to go to Baltimore for a regional conference of firefighters. So I'm trying to feel better every day. Yeah. Yeah, I'm looking forward to it.
Listen, man, just make sure that you be safe. And how long are you going to be there for? A week or so?
No, I'll just be there this weekend. I'll be back Monday. I'll be back on the air Monday.
Well,
yeah.
Look forward to hearing you on Monday, brother, because I know you'll be bringing, as they say, bringing the funk.
I'll try my best. You know that, Jay.
Oh, quick question for you, man, that I wanted to ask Dr. Baroudi, man. Well, really, a friend of mine wanted to ask Dr. Baroudi. You know, you've been seeing a lot of these brothers wearing skirts and dresses and all of that nonsense. I'm wondering, how do we classify them? Should they be classified as straight or developing homosexuals?
You know, that's interesting. Because in certain cultures there, particularly Muslims, they wear kalabiyah. You know, the kalabiyah is a long, looks like a skirt, you know.
Yeah, but they got pants under it. So
that's true.
That's a whole different thing. The kalabiyah, the skirt, and all that other foolishness is not the same. Let's don't do that. Let's don't play that game.
Well, no, I'm not trying to mix apples and oranges. I'm just saying, when you're saying guys wearing skirts, I know what you're saying, because there's some designs where a man will wear, looks like from the top, a nice sports coat with a tie, and then he has a skirt on. He has a literal skirt on with some socks and his shoes. You know, I mean, the look in itself is, to me, hideous. Me personally, you know, but some people have embraced that. There's some athletes that have done that, you know. Trying to put forth a fashion statement, and to me, it's ugly. You know,
and not only is it ugly, but it's dangerous too. if you really want to be honest about it. And you know how we get down. Certain dangers we don't want to identify because it may offend the Saltine. So if right. you say something counter-reactive to what the Saltine may think or feel, then you may get the type of backlash that, you know, they're really scared of.
Right.
You know, it's nothing in the world like a scared neighbor. But yeah. I can't think of anything in the world more, you know, demeaning than a scared Negro. Listen, man, oh, I just wanted to say hello to you, brother, and check on you and make sure you're all right. And,
thank you.
You know, enjoy your trip, man. Have a good time. You know what I mean?
Thank you.
Make sure you get you.
Well, listen, Jay, there's one day I look forward to, and that's the day me and you can kick it, okay? Even if I got to come up to New York to find your ass, I'm going to find you.
Okay. Well, we'll make it do.
That's for sure.
Look, put me on hold because
okay.
I got to finish something.
All right,
my brother. All right.
Peace. Brothers and sisters, we end this program like we end all of our programs with the words of Stephen Biko. The most potent weapon in the hands of the oppressor is the minds of the oppressed. This program is dedicated and committed to helping to free the African mind. But not just the M-I-N-D, but the M-I-N-E, because under the feet of African people lies all of the world's resources that everybody wants, think they can't do without, and they sure in hell don't want to pay for. Brothers and sisters, you have a blessed and wonderful day. Shem Hotep means go in peace. Asante Sana means thank you. Bivahodie means our victorious destiny. Brothers and sisters, we will be victorious. You have a wonderful day, and I'll see you on Monday. Have a great weekend. I hope make it safe. I know I'm trying my best to be safe. You take care, family. Peace.